If you're a shrewd shopper, it's about to be your favorite time of the year. HyperX will be running massive sales for the holiday season. Get up to 50% off some of our most popular products, like the ultra-comfy Cloud 2 headset, the tough, responsive Alloy Origins mechanical keyboard, and the fan-favorite Quadcast USB microphone. Sales will be going on at all major e-tailers, but be sure to head to HyperX.com and sign up for the newsletter to get the scoop on the biggest deals. Happy holidays from HyperX.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this season, we're playing through The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. In our last episode, we made it to a big, sandy, dried-out ocean that we were able to use the power of magic crystals to make wet again. That's what's happening in this video game.
If you enjoyed this podcast...
Welcome to the last episode of Chat of the Wild, actually.
We've done it, guys. We made it.
We met a robot friend, and he was helping us find his boat that he believed had the flame that we are looking for. And we went to a couple places. Turns out they were wrong.
We went, checked out his house first, and then...
Yeah. Got sad.
Found out his buddies might be somewhere else.
They're all dead. And he knows he's dead, too.
Yes.
Yes. Such a weird existence. The last place to check out was the pirate stronghold, and so we are
not that one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, not the first pirate stronghold we've dealt with here. We get up to this thing, and we're looking face to face with Peek from Attack on Titan, which was just weird for me. and we have to like sneak into the side, so it's just there's this giant long, I don't know, alligator looking mouth skull thing that we're
Leviathan maybe.
Yeah, something like that. And we have to
we've seen stuff like this before in Dodongo's Cavern, or like even earlier in this game in the dungeon we had that like was it a dragon face or something that ate the boulder that we pushed at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Remember that. We're no stranger to giant skulls. That's been a common thing in this series.
And creepy, toothy smile faces.
Yes. So we get into here, and this is like its own dungeon on its own, right? Like, we go through here, and there's a crystal that we have to find that does time stuff. And this was the stuff that I was really remembering when I was first talking about the crystal in the sand ocean. That we said earlier. And
we're moving it around kind of like the boat, but this is the first time we've been able to pick one up and transport it with us, really.
Yeah. This was the RE Secret of Seasons thing for sure.
I guarantee
you they were inspired by this part here for a lot of the stuff, because it is very similar in the way that it works.
Did a much better job.
Definitely did a much better job.
I don't know, man. You just did this whole thing, especially when they call it a pirate stronghold, and I'm thinking of the Majora's Mask one, which is... I sometimes get annoyed when I get to that part of the game, but then I'm also like, you're dropped into a space, and it's just like, I don't know, you got to get a hook shot, but whatever, go for it. And this was like, pick up the rock... Put it down to kill some bad guys from time to time, but then pick it back up again and get moving.
Okay.
Go that way.
If we are ranking pirate strongholds, yes, this is fairly low. Because if we're talking Wind Waker and we're talking Majora's Mask, or we're talking which one? Either Ages or Seasons, didn't they have a pirate stronghold in there?
There's a Thieves stronghold, which is a pretty sweet dungeon in Link to the Past.
Yeah. I mean, quick ranking, I would say probably Wind Waker is number one for me, and then probably Majora's Mask, number two on there. But it's this
a good
one,
dungeon, though.
Yes,
that Link to the Past dungeon's pretty good.
We're really not doing anything special with pirates in here. We are doing some cool stuff with time things, though. We get this time crystal, and we do have to manipulate stuff as we're going through here. There are, for whatever reason, like barbed wires that grow over certain doors that we use the crystal to. They don't exist in the past, so we can use the crystal.
Time barbed wire has appeared in the eons since, but when it is functional in the past, some doors have active electricity barriers.
Yeah.
And so that's the two flip sides of the coin.
But yeah, in general, I enjoyed this section. It's just cool to have. If this was the dungeon that we were doing, I'd be okay with that too. Maybe something a little bit longer for it. But, and you know, throwing a mini boss, throwing a big boss at the end or something like that. But outside of it being called quote unquote pirate, and we don't really deal with anything new other than more bokoblins that we
not
come
really.
Across. We come across electric bokoblins in this, in the past there, but they're not not even pirates.
No, it's the same guys. But I'm throwing. I was doing a lot of nudging the sphere just enough, and then hacking dudes up and knocking them out of the circle. One of the times, I picked the sphere up, like, oh, I have to hit him like one more time. But as soon as I got him back into the sphere, he exploded into a heart. Like, oh, cool.
What an existence. Oh, that poor guy. Go ahead.
I was a little bit bummed that you couldn't roll the little time capsule thing.
Yeah, if you tried, it would just like flip over once and that was it.
Yeah, I had this great plan to get around enemies by rolling the crystal past them so that it would...
Yes!
Yeah, so that they could, or that they couldn't get to me and I could just shoot them from a distance, but it just thonks on the ground immediately.
Yeah, they give you the same controls as the bomb where you can throw it or roll it, but it does nothing because it's heavy. And it really is... Like, I was thinking of all these cool, clever things I wanted to do with the enemies... And honestly, you can just run past everything.
You can run past most of them. Yeah.
Because it takes them a second to snap in to time. And then it takes them a second. They have to then act like they would if they had just seen you normally. Like if you'd encountered them normally in the world. And that takes another second. And by the time they figure out you're there, you're passing. The sphere isn't very large. So, like, I stopped and killed all of them. But knew that there was no reason for me to do so other than I wanted to make this more fun than it really was.
Sure. I get that. Yeah, there's a couple. I liked this generally because I think the concepts are fun. And while they didn't necessarily like execute on them in a way that was like creative, I wasn't doing anything too laborious that made me like not enjoy the like playing the game. So that combination, I was like, I'm having fun with this. It's not the best. It's not you know, the best part. And that's fine though. I'm fine.
It's not I'm not hitting a roadblock. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah. There were some cool parts where we get down to this like one area below it that it's when we bring the stone in, it causes these like these stone formations to come out of the ground that we then like circle back around and hop on. I thought the shape was a little like, okay, that's really convenient in a way that's like, really, just the way the platforms just did like a U shape back to where you need to go.
Well, they chiseled them, you know. So that it was that it worked like that. Yeah, I did like that though.
Tegan, how'd you feel about this little mini dungeon?
It's all right. It feels very much like this should be more of a tutorial dungeon than it is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel like the implications of what we've learned traversing this smaller area should have wider reaching consequences.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't. And that's kind of disappointing.
Other than like serving as a refresher for what you did last time you were dealing with time crystals. Like, oh, just a reminder, this does different stuff, whether or not it's active or not.
And right. also, like, this one's super portable, but also it's heavy, and even though we gave you the bomb controls, it doesn't work like that. Like, I don't know.
So weird.
I feel like this should be... So, okay, just skip ahead for a second. The dungeon that we're going to be playing in this episode has a time crystal in it, but it's stationary, and it stays in one spot the whole time. I feel like it should have been flipped, right?
Right.
Where the big dungeon should be us manipulating a time crystal, like, throughout different things, where, like, the beginning of this should have been, we have a bunch of different time crystals in different spots, like what we did the first time we got into the desert area. Like, when we're going through the mines, like, that, this is largely the same kind of thing, except we can carry a thing with us, which isn't as beneficial as you might think.
Right. It doesn't inform what's coming after it, really.
And with, like, the dungeon in particular that we're going to be traversing, it makes, I think, more sense for that to have a piece like this that we should be running around in the hallways with, as opposed to just, like, one stationary item.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we go through, we circle around on this here, and...
It is a circle.
Yeah. So, let's see, correct me if I'm wrong.
We just hit a loop, we get back to the room, we put it in the pedestal and go, and it's over.
Da-na-na-na.
Yeah, and that, well, that powers up this section here. That just opens a door, we circle back around. We don't get anything here, right? Other than, like, knowledge.
Yeah, just...
Other than, like... well, yeah, other than this is where we get a way to track the ship.
Yep.
Yeah.
I forget what we're told because, like, Fee pops out and's like, oh, hey, because you did that, I know this. But, like, for whatever reason, I wasn't paying attention to Fee. And...
I think there's, like, wrecked, like, there's pieces of, like, mass and stuff. Like, there's wrecked ship parts that are there. And they're like, oh, this can probably belong to that boat.
I've gotten the stench of pirate now.
Right, that's all she needs. Like, I feel like that's what she got more than anything else. Is she was like, okay, I can smell them now, and I can get my smell-o-vision out.
Right, yeah, now you can douse it. Because I didn't know what this pirate ship was before. Despite very much feeling like I'm a computer person, and I should have been able to download it from our little Captain Robot friend.
You would think... but yeah, she can douse for that now. And what we have to do is we have to find an invisible ship, not quite a ghost ship, but like literally a ship using invisible technology to camouflage itself.
Yeah. Cause even with, you know, you've got your time crystal on, you can't see it. It's still just floating around. Do they tell you that it's, do they tell us that we're going after a moving object? Because I had to figure it out.
I assumed it moved. But I don't know if does it start moving immediately, or does it only move once you get close to it?
Because I did what I always do, which is I hopped in the boat, I got my douse rod out, and I pointed it to where it was, hit pause, and went, okay, it's over there somewhere. And then I put it over there, and it had moved, and I was like, wait, where am I? And it took a few more of that because I didn't want to just drive around with my douse rod out going, where are you? Oh, it's this way. Like, I didn't want to just walk around in first person mode.
Well, dousing. Then you should have just boated around firing bombs everywhere. That would have been a lot more entertaining.
I did a mix of both. Like, driving with the douse open until I was like, this is garbage. And then just shooting randomly at the horizon.
Yeah.
Shooting randomly at the horizon, I think, is kind of the way to go on this one. But I don't think they actually, like, from a game perspective, I don't think they put the boat in the water until after you finish this area. So, like, there
absolutely not.
There's, like, a zero-sum chance that you would have figured out that there was a boat here at all before you did that dungeon, which I feel like is a missed opportunity. If there was a big, evil, invisible boat stalking me the entire time I was on in the water beforehand, I feel like that
retaliating,
would
retaliating, maybe?
Yeah, that would have made this more exciting, you know, is like, now we can find the boat and actually do something about it, you know?
It would have had the same feeling that, like, the ghost ship in Wind Waker that can sometimes show up had. Yeah.
But other than
don't get me wrong, I did like the moment I realized I was hunting down a moving vessel, and I was like, oh, cool, all right. But I just, I didn't know. I had no idea.
But we do hit it a couple times, and it becomes visible again. And this is apparently
three times.
This is apparently Skipper's ship. And so, like, we've been looking for this whole time, and he's just like, "Yep, that's my boat." And I'm just like, "Really?
I thought they sank
that
your
was
boat.
It." No, I mean, no. He said that right. This is his boat.
This is his boat.
Yeah, yeah.
His crew's on it and everything. So,
right.
Yeah, they're in the brig, but yeah.
Sure, do we should okay. maybe yeah. help my friends in my boat.
We climb up here.
When he first tells us about it, he tells us we're going to have to go find them on the bottom of the ocean because they're in a boat that sank or something like that. Like, I know where the treasure is, but it sank or something.
Well, no, I mean, we were chasing down his boat this whole time. Like,
right.
He thought...
I thought we were looking for the location of the shipwreck.
No, because at first we were going to the boatyard, and we were trying to get in the one garage that a boat would have been sitting in. And
yeah,
okay. So, like, yeah, what we were chasing down was an active boat. I think
as opposed to a passive boat.
Exactly. No, I think Fi's whole unlocking the dowsing is what throws it all off. Like, the fact that we had to find a sunken ship.
Yes, absolutely.
For her to be like, because
I went to this section first, and it was like, you can't do anything here.
Right. Yeah. It's just a bad context-sensitive part, and that, like, this is where, when we were playing back through these Zelda games, you know, the whole reason we started doing this was because Breath of the Wild. Breath of the Wild lets you do anything, right? All the other Zelda games we've played since then is, like, you have to talk to this person first before this door inexplicably unlocks.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have to go in this circle, and then someone says, okay, you went in the circle, now this thing is going to appear that... As the lore goes, it's been here this whole time, but you can't interact with it until you ran in a circle.
Until you can smell it.
So, yeah, this is one of the worst parts of Zelda, like, in terms of the adventuring parts, that it's all just too scripted. But that's where we're at. We climb up on here. We're on the sand ship. This is our dungeon here. And so we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to explore this passive ship.
Hey, Lassie, what are you doing here? Timmy's in a well. Sequelcast 2 and Friends is a podcast looking at movies in a franchise, one film at a time, like Harry Potter, Hellraiser, and The Hobbit. And sometimes the hosts talk about video games and TV as well. And now it's part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Oh, Lassie, we don't need to rescue Timmy. He likes the well enough, I guess. Darth Vader is Luke's father. Lassie, I told you to lay off the spoilers.
If you're a Shrewd Shopper, it's about to be your favorite time of the year. HyperX will be running massive sales for the holiday season. Get up to 50% off some of our most popular products like the Ultra Comfy Cloud 2 headset, the tough responsive LA Origins mechanical keyboard, and the fan favorite Quadcast USB microphone. Sales will be going on at all major retailers, but be sure to head to HyperX.com and sign up for the newsletter to get the scoop on the biggest deals. Happy holidays from HyperX.
Come on in, take a seat. What are you having? Well, of course I've heard of Hair the Dogcast. That's the podcast that talks about video games and beer. For all of the latest gaming headlines, craft beer reviews, retro games, modern games, series retrospectives, console studies, and on occasion, extremely hungover discussions on the lore of Kingdom Hearts, make sure to check out Hair of the Dogcast, part of the HyperX Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tegan Somerset.
I'm Rocky Hardy.
And I'm Brian Cartwright.
And we are Impossible Coin, a podcast about video games. Join us every other week as we discuss gaming news.
Did you know he tried to smuggle $100,000 across the Canadian border?
Genre differences.
Sometimes it's your turn to press the button, and sometimes it's your turn to block.
And deep lore. I've spent so long on this, Brian, you can't do this to me.
We will sell you nothing and solve none of your problems, but we sure are fun.
Impossible Coin,
a podcast about video games.
See you on Thursdays.
Thursdays.
Hi, everybody. It's time to talk about Patreon. We haven't talked about Patreon in a long time. Go to patreon.com/chatofthewild. You can support us just like Cage did.
Cage.
They went on there. They gave us some money. And they get this little form to talk about their favorite things about Zelda, and we talk about it. For Cage, we asked them, what is your favorite Zelda game and why? And they said, Twilight Princess. In my opinion, it has the best dungeons, story, and music in the entire series. I also have very fond memories of playing it for the first time after finally tracking down a Wii when it was near impossible to get. Ooh, I absolutely remember those times.
Yeah, getting a Wii was way harder than getting a copy of Twilight Princess, because they put those out there for sure. It did take me a little while to get a copy of Twilight Princess, though. Maybe like a month afterward, I finally was able to snag one. But I had a Wii at that point.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's been documented. I was, you know, midnight release with Wii, standing in line, getting that Twilight Princess, getting that Elebits, getting that Wii Sports.
Getting that Red Steel.
Yeah. Yes! And returning Red Steel the next day. So
that I got a little more mileage out of that game. I did not play the story very much, but there was some weird split screen co-op going on. But Twilight Princess is a good game that tastes like beef ramen.
Tegan, thoughts on Twilight Princess?
Twilight Princess has one of the most beautiful stories of all of the Zelda games. That this is really like a turning point in the Zelda series where they focus a little bit more on like the narrative, like implementations of what these characters are and what they do and who they're supposed to represent in the story overall. And you really see that in Twilight Princess. It's very good.
Different Zelda too, and one that works very well for the story they're telling.
Yeah, exactly. This is the first Zelda who isn't just a princess. She's also like very obviously a military leader in the world, which is not something that the other Zeldas have been up until this point. They've all been exclusively princess in pink dress. Now I get kidnapped. Heyo, bye. And we see Zelda with a sword, ready to defend her kingdom up to and into the throne room.
Yeah.
Well, also, the twist they did with her is that she wasn't kidnapped. She willingly sacrificed herself.
Yeah.
A couple times.
Big, big difference there. Yeah, I think my only complaint about Twilight Princess was ever that it was like, well, not ever. But my biggest complaint about Twilight Princess was just that it was kind of ugly, like, compared to the other Zelda games. Love the story. Love the music. Love the dungeons. Love the items. All that stuff. Fantastic. They tried to put too much on the Wii, though, and the GameCube.
We should come up with a term for a combination of edgy and ugly. I can't think of a good portmanteau, so we need a term.
Mid-2000s.
Yeah. The main problem visually with Zelda Twilight Princess was the overuse of bloom in Twilight. Because that just made it really hard to see.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Let's not crap too much on this game during their, their shout out.
Well, it was also the bridge.
Keep the good stuff in there.
It was the first big bridge game between GameCube and Wii hardware.
There were some big bridges in Twilight Princess, you're right.
There are a lot of them.
There were some huge bridges. but like the fact that they made a game that ran beautifully on both systems, despite the limitations of some of the hardware, very good, honestly.
Yes, absolutely. So, Cage, for their favorite Zelda item, they said the Rock's Feather. Very, very good one.
Do love every time Rock's Feather.
Every time I use it, I feel like I'm doing something illegal and it rules.
Especially when you're in, like, the dungeon 2D segments. And then there's like Mario enemies there too, and you can hop on them like Mario enemies, and you're just like, this is awesome. Why am I doing this?
Right. And they say using it with the Pegasus boots in Link's Awakening is one of the most fun things you can do in a Zelda game.
It's like a speed booster from Metroid Prime, or Metroid Prime, Super Metroid. Almost. You got the run and the jump.
Well, and then in the Oracle games, they gave you the cape, right? Or did they have the cape in Link's Awakening?
Seasons. Seasons gives us the cape. Okay, yeah. And then in Minish Cap, they make the cape like god tier.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yes. And that just does sort of the combination of being able to let you just jump from one end of the screen to the other. And that's fantastic. Do you have a favorite Zelda like? They say, not sure if it counts, but I love the Binding of Isaac. I think it doesn't count as a Zelda-like, but it's very Zelda-inspired because it just is an overhead, like, dungeon Zelda game, right? It doesn't actually have the adventure part of it.
It's closer to Zelda 1 than anything, but yeah, it's just takes a lot. It's heavily influenced by it, I think, in some ways.
They say I was originally sold on the game in like 2011 or something when I heard it was heavily inspired by 2D Zelda games, right? Since then, I've put well over 1,000 hours into it across various platforms. Man. I hear that a lot with people that love that game. That is an endless game.
Yeah.
And it's one I tried when it first came out and I liked it. And then eventually I just got tired of it. And since then, they've added so many more things and done all this stuff, and I just haven't gone back to it. But
tons of ways to customize that game. It's really cool. I think I beat Mom once and was like, cool. Wait, there's more?
Right. Thank you, Cage, for supporting the show. And if you would like to get a shout out as well, like I said, you can go to patreon.com/chatofthewild, donate, you get ad-free versions of the show, you get early if you do on certain tiers, you also get our side quest, a monthly show that we do where we talk about games other than the Zelda games and the Zelda likes that we play for this show. So if any of that sounds good to you, go to patreon.com/chatofthewild and donate as little as $1 a month, and you really help out the show, and we really, really appreciate it. Anyway, let's get back to the show.
Thank you. Bye.
So we're back, and I said it was a passive ship because, again, it was not doing anything, right? It was just sort of floating around invisibly as well. Would that be fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a Roomba. It just keeps going whether or not you're home.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's on a timer.
Now that we have that cleared
and then
up,
we hit
we
it
can
three times, and so it had to park in its dock.
Right.
Its little Roomba dock on the wall.
It had to go home and empty its dustbin or whatever.
Yeah. So we're in the dungeon now, officially. I love this dungeon.
I hate this dungeon so much.
It was fine.
This is the worst dungeon of every Zelda game. I hate it so much.
Every Zelda game.
This is my least favorite dungeon. You can keep your water temples. This is the worst one.
The longer I went through here, I kept going like, when am I going to get to the part that like Tegan just hates? Because you have hinted that this is the week for you.
Yeah, this is the one. I hate this dungeon.
And I kept going and I'm just like, eh, I don't know.
It wasn't
great. It wasn't awful.
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
This dungeon looks the same to me. Every single time I get in that hallway, I get turned around and I don't know how. It took me 40 minutes to get to the boss battle after I'd done the rest of the dungeon. Because I was just like, I go in this door, and then I go up these stairs, and then I'm in the same hallway.
Whoa.
I am not kidding.
Did you find the map?
Yeah, I found the map. That was the worst part, is I'll look at the map, and then I do the thing. And then finally, I was like, okay, hang on. And I pulled out my game guide right? My physical copy from when I first got the game. And I opened up the map so I had it. And I was like, okay, I have to go here. I have to do this. I have to go down this hallway. And I was just like, why can't I just teleport to the entrance of this dang dungeon and then climb to the boss room?
Not being able to visually differentiate the rooms would be tough because basically this dungeon is go into each room.
Yep.
In past and present.
Yep.
And if you do that, you should have, you know, each thing unlocked or something.
Go into every room, interact with this thing, leave this room, go back in time, go back in this room, interact
with this thing.
You were describing the Legend of Zelda, too.
Right, yeah, I know. But, like, but this one was exceptionally bad because everything just looks the same to me. And so I got lost, and I was just, like, on my stream, you can hear me getting more and more frustrated as I continue to walk into the wrong room that I literally just exited because I got turned around in the hallway.
I can't help you with that.
I could see that.
No, it was just bad.
Have we confirmed that Tegan isn't playing like some sort of cursed copy of the game? That's just like a Twilight Zone version.
Twilight Realm.
Oh no, version. This is the copy with Ben in it. Like, God.
See, for me, this dungeon was if you took all of the dungeons from Ocarina, mm-hmm. fed it to an AI, this was the dungeon it would make.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I loved that. Like, it felt like a throwback dungeon to me in so many different ways. Just like the way the levels were laid out and the way it was like teaching you things just reminded me of the Ocarina formula, mm-hmm. in a way.
Mm.
And I really enjoyed it. And also, I loved this mid-boss. I have complained multiple times about when you have to just do a sword fighting like against a single character, something about this one changes drastically. And I don't know what it is, but I just felt good. I felt challenged,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it.
Okay.
I thought the mid-boss was cool, but I just rolled this dude so hard.
I cheesed him real good.
Oh, I did not. I struggled with this mid-boss also.
I had to use two fairies on him. And almost broke my shield. I loved it.
This entire Zelda dungeon is a nightmare for me. I hate it so much. I hate everything about it.
I thought it started out strong and I was liking where it was gonna go, and then it just really didn't it didn't get better from where I thought I saw it go. Because I had to get my bearings at first to try and figure out where am I, what does it mm-hmm. want, where do I need to go. I'm going through all these doors, checking all these things. Eventually, you have to get down to the bottom of the ship first before you're able to, like, activate the crystal.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. But eventually, you climb up on the mat, like... Okay, let's go.
Okay, so we get into the dungeon, and we can't do anything with it in terms of time yet. We get in here, and we go through some things. We have to go to the very bottom of the boat to get a key that we then can come back to, like, the entrance of the boat, and that's where the locked door is. You mm-hmm. go into there, and that's where we find the captain. And that's where we have this one-on-one battle. I think what I love about this is that it's a very simple setup where he is on the what do you call that, the front of the boat that's like a long.
I haven't played Sea of Thieves in so long.
Maybe it's a very long plank sticking out from the front of the boat, right?
Yeah,
we just make it's him walk the plank essentially.
Well, that's off the side almost. Like the essentially, like, yeah, this is where you used to sit when you played Sea of Thieves, on the very, very tippy top of the front of the boat where you're just about to fall into the ocean and then you pull out an accordion.
And mm-hmm. the idea is that he's at the very end and he sees you and he comes running at you. And ideally, you want to be running at him because this is a battle of gaining ground.
Some room. Yeah.
And the way it works is you and him are just trading blows back and forth. And if you can time your shield just right, you can parry him and that can stun him. Mm-hmm. But he can also...
It's fencing with a shield. and a guy with a hook hand.
Yeah, it's exact fencing. That's the best way to put it. Yeah, because it definitely is. It has similar rules to fencing as well, of just you staying in a straight line with each other, right? Like you just move. You're doing it that way. It's not necessarily about gaining ground, but it is about like getting your hit in. And you're going back and forth with it, and you have like three phases with him. Every time you can get up to there, he will. The first time, I don't think anything happens other than your back spike things that damage you if he gets you all the way back there and moves up. But then the second time you beat him, he loses one of his arms and just sort of like goes berserk on you.
With his hook hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, got the shield out, did a lot of parrying. I'm glad I've got the fully powered, happy magic goddess shield or whatever it's called that regens. Because I had no trouble. The trouble I had was shaking the nunchuck to parry when I told it to, and having it register, because it didn't always register. And so a lot of the potion drinking I had to do on this was because of that. But yeah, when it worked, it worked.
But we get through all this, and when we beat him, we get a bow and arrow.
Finally.
A classic one.
Yeah. Now we can kill everyone.
Yes. Now the game changes for real. With this kind of ranged ability, we can now take out bokoblins from a distance very easily. We don't have to have this sword combat, though I still have problems. If I'm trying to aim really far, I'm just trying to hold my Joy-Con steady, and I'm like, just move a bit to the right. What are you doing? Just move.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to like get them, like line it up from a distance, and it just isn't working.
And that like swings wildly out of bounds.
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty forgiving as far their hitboxes from a distance are pretty forgiving, but yeah.
It is, yes. But with this, we can now go back to the main area of the boat outside, and we can hit a button over there that opens up the time crystal. Mm-hmm. And this time crystal, when you activate it, it also revives a whole bunch of bokoblins.
A ton of them.
Where I have a thematic problem with thematic problem with the entire dungeon in that we just fought this cool robo pirate captain, and then his whole crew is generic enemies.
Yep.
Like just generic bokoblins.
Yeah, we
don't
see
robo
like,
bokoblins.
Yeah, there's no mecha pirates to go along with Captain Mecha Pirate. It's just more. We have archers now.
It's just the same dudes.
This game did not spend enough time with character design, like flat out. Like we do not have enough variety.
Haven't.
That's
enemy
fair.
Design.
That's fair, yeah.
And I hear a lot of people make that thing about Breath of the Wild, and I'm just like, man, like 21st century Zelda games do not have a varied amount of enemy types.
No, I mean, yeah, a game like Elden Ring was crazy with how many different characters you have in there, and that really like stood out. This game, we have like five. There's like five types of enemies that we fight, and like
is just running through Elden Ring. Like, there's so many amazingly good things in that game.
But anyway, we do go through here. We have to you do have to take on a lot of these at first. We do come back a couple times in this dungeon to this area, and after I cleared them all out the first time, they respawned, and I was like, I'm not doing this again.
Yes,
like, I run past every single one of you. No, I ran
this
past
is the most time,
I was like, I'm not fighting you.
This is the most time you have to spend above deck, and there's like 12 guys out here. And so, when you kill them all the first time, it helps. It's only annoying when you come back to the above deck, because you don't really have to crisscross back and forth a bunch anymore. Mm-hmm. If you do, you're out there because you're lost and you don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
Which I understand. I did that too. But yeah, for the most part, kill them the first time, you'll be okay.
Well, it's dumb.
You get so many monster horns.
Maybe.
Oh, do maybe. You?
Maybe I just, yeah. I did.
I wonder if there's, like an RNG that's different in each game, like they did with the DS games, right? Where like, I have a bunch of tumbleweeds, Tegan.
No! Tumbleweeds, so, my beloved.
Right. And you were like, and then you're talking about, we got all these monster horns. I'm like, I don't have like any monster horns.
Yeah, but monster horns drop.
Yeah, yeah, all you just got, to keep killing the guys on the monster ship. And why are you guys so many monster horns? Just take out your frustration of being lost in the ship every time you have to go below deck on every single monster you see. You're going to have a ton of monster parts.
And I've gotten to the point now where I do not pull the whip out anymore. I've been disappointed too many times.
No.
Like I thought I would be able to steal more parts, but no.
Mm-hmm.
I thought so too.
I did miss that from Wind Waker. That was perfect in Wind Waker.
I think the Wind Waker grappling hook animation is also satisfying.
Yeah.
As opposed to the whip. Well,
you don't just do that yourself.
Screen.
Oh, yeah. You're playing with button controls. You would have to do that yourself with the Wiimote or something to get him to look like that.
Right.
It's not nearly as satisfying as Evil Betty.
So what I loved about this here, though, is that when we turn the crystal back on, no, it is kind of dub. You'd hit this crystal to turn it on. And then as soon as you do that, one of the Buck Goblins at the top hits the switch to turn, like, close it up. So like it's like, active, but he puts a shield over it immediately.
Yeah.
And if
that's
you
our
don't,
next objective is getting that removed.
If you don't do that, you're going to waste time because we go back into the ship and there are a couple rooms in here that this I loved. I literally was just like, oh, this is so cool. I love this so much. The cool thing that happens is that you get into a room and you see sunlight coming through this vent. When you look up, you can see the crystal outside and you can fire an arrow from it to make everything turn old again to get rid of the electricity stuff off of there. And I was just like, this is smart. With this, we're going to be going through this dungeon and we are going to be having to go back and forth with the time crystal. A couple times we can do it in the room. There's a few of the times that we do need to like get to a certain point where we've done all we can with the, like, let's say past version of it. Mm-hmm. And then we need to go back all the way up again and make it all dusty and old again and then go through it one more time. Now that we have a bow and arrow, this is other things that I liked. There are switches in other rooms that you have to look through holes in them and fire mm-hmm. arrows through to hit switches to open up doors in other rooms. I that's just fun to me. I don't mm-hmm. know. I just like it. BC,
I did. I did love the fact that they balance between, like you said, changing something in the present or past and then going through, like opening a door and then coming back in the past to go through like that door you just opened, with, you know, the rooms where you can look through the ceiling and shoot the time crystal mm-hmm. through like a hole in the deck floor, which as soon as I realized, which I didn't even realize it, like Fee had to tell me, oh, hey, if you look up, you can look through the ceiling and see the time crystal and hit it. I was like, I'm mad that I didn't figure this out, but I appreciate that they did it.
Yeah, they have the sunlight coming through in certain rooms to try to just let you know there's something there. But again, this is what this game has a big problem with, and it's been an issue with a lot of Zelda games, and it's the thing that I've had in previous episodes in the season, is that they do have to just flat out tell you things. Mm-hmm. Or like, in the past, you guys have been expertly designing these things to make you, like, you know, your eyes get pulled towards something and like
Link
make you think
up.
In something. Yeah, there's,
you know,
all these things they've done for
environmental other than more than just the sunlight coming through. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it is just the color palette in the past where, yeah, everything just looks kind of samey. And because I forgot again, I know this puzzle. As soon as I remembered and looked up, I was like, oh yeah, this was a cool moment the first time I played this game.
And now I
once
hate
again,
it.
another cool moment. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. And then, that was the height of the dungeon for me.
I mean, Tegan, what are your feelings on the... I mean, we know that you have problems with readability in this dungeon.
It's so bad. Like, Link's initial reactions to stuff are fine. They're very helpful. Good job. But then that's all you get. That's all you get. If you miss that initial... If you're, like, doing something else while Link's doing something and you miss it, uh-oh. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I like the art style on this Link, but it's not—he's not as expressive. I don't notice all the time things that he's looking at.
Yeah, and like that's something that I think is like a detriment to changing back to this style in particular after like Wind Waker or whatever. But also, I feel like they did a better job of increasing Breath of the Wild Link's readability because he'll actually like turn his head to look at stuff. So even if you miss what he's looking at. He still turns to look at it.
You don't have to see his face.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about, like, the full reset or whatever. And also, like, they did a better job, I think, of making the rooms in other games more readable than the rooms in here. You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you can walk in a room and you go, okay, yeah, I get what this is about. But a lot of times in this one, I'm just like, another room in a ship.
On the first floor, or the first basement floor, those rooms that you eventually do go into, the doors don't even really seem like doors that can be interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I eventually went up to one of them and was like, can I budge this? But the first time you have to run all the way down through the ship to the bottom, I just ran right past them because they didn't seem like things that were...
They felt like set dressing, not like actual things you could open. Yeah, and then a lot of other... like Zelda games, they would have just been set dressing.
I think, okay, again, this is like a weird flashback, but again, with Ari, I remember having a complaint in that game that there was a door that looked like other doors that you could open on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But you actually had to kill the enemies there. Zelda in the past has had it where you walk through a room, walk through a door into a room, and there's a cutscene where the metal cage comes over it, and then Link looks behind him. And that just tells you, you can't leave this room through this door right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like,
that's just it. And this, they have those, but I believe the design is... No, see, the design for it is the same, but it does blend in because it's a black, like, designed, like, bar cage thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, over ornately designed. Yeah. It's over a dark brown door, right?
I don't see it. Yes.
If there was some sort of like light source that made it glint or something, that would immediately ease the readability of that. But like,
Just get us the vertical metal bars. We have those in this dungeon too.
We do get that here in this dungeon. They also have these, and they're things that you could shoot through, but there's no reason to. And you just see the switch on the other side of the door that when you get around the loop, you'll open those bars up. So we get both of them.
But there are issues with this. One of the other aspects of this dungeon is that there is a little boat hanging off the side that we can make go up and down. That this sort of layout was a little confusing at first for me. But once I realized, like, okay, I get where I need to be, and I think it's because I did things out of order at first. If you just go to that boat as soon as you can, like when you have your bow, and then you go down there, you're not going to be able to do anything with it because, like, even the door or the window is closed off.
The porthole, if you will, is blocked at that point.
And so you have to go around inside of the boat first to hit a switch that then opens those ports.
Yeah.
And then you need to go back out to the front and through there.
It's a way to toggle the ship switch in the second and third floors below deck.
Yeah.
It's just a way to get up and around if you need to for at any point.
Yeah, again, this is very similar to something like the water dungeon. In Ocarina, the water temple, where like you had different levels and you had things to control on it. Again, like I said, this was all the Ocarina dungeons fed into an AI, and this is what they made.
This is pretty. It might be the closest we're gonna get to something of that. It's not. It's still kind of linear, but it's It's not, but I was hoping
they've
that
all
it
been
was
linear.
Be, I was hoping it would be a little bit more open at first. And when we had to go on the mast to reopen the shield they put around it, and it was just like, go up here, now go this way, and like you just I was just like, man. Ah, I thought I was gonna get more from you, man. I thought I was gonna get more from you, pirate ship, but no.
Why would you, Brian? I just thought, like, we've been doing this for years.
I know. We're at peak Aonuma right now. I know where we are.
It's all been linear, man.
I'm just hoping they're just taking it away. Just get a little bit more away from him.
You will get your non-linear Zelda in about 5 months.
No, I will get it when Tezuka makes a Zelda game again. Or Fujibayashi makes his Zelda game again. But not if Aonuma makes his Zelda game.
I mean, I'm talking about Tears of the Kingdom.
I know. About, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying.
But, like,
I my least favorite Zelda director.
Okay. At one point, we do come across the crew, the robot crew. They are in a little caged area at the bottom.
Yeah.
That once we turn the crystal on and can go back in time there, we do find them. They are, I like the way they phrased it. They said, there's that glowy blue thing at the door that won't let us through or whatever. They just call it like a glowy thing or shiny. I can't remember how they phrased it on there.
Mm.
But again, this feels very Ocarina Dungeon-y where we find an NPC down there in a cage and then they tell us to go do a new thing, right? They mark a new thing on our map.
The first time I went through here, I didn't realize that I could interact with these guys. I brute forced this door that this lock because there's four different things you can do. So, or you know, you have to hit it four times.
So there is that door there, but the thing
first time
is that
around.
You can, yes, that gives you takes you into a room with another key in it. That's
yes.
all that room does.
That's like how we get down to the bottom to get the first key to go back outside. But so yeah, I right. brute forced that door because I didn't know how to read the instructions that were in the jail cell with them.
I wanted to bring that up. I mean, so you had an issue reading it. For me, I just immediately realized that you could count the red pegs on the mast.
Is that what it was?
Yes, and they were colored 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Okay.
Tegan, I mean, did you have any issues with this?
No,
I'm sure you remember this puzzle.
Yeah, I remember
you've done
the
this
puzzle.
Multiple times.
I remember the puzzle. I just couldn't get the layout down.
Yeah,
yeah. Every time you were like, "Oh right, this room. I know what to do in this room."
Yeah, I know what to
like,
do.
I'm
here.
Out of the room.
Yeah.
Where do I go?
Where do I go now? And then like the same thing again and again and again for the entire dungeon.
Yeah. So the crew tells us we need to turn the power back on. In order to get through this area here, because there are these machines down below that when you turn on, they just start moving up and down, and that lets us just like get through there. So
they don't
do
seem to power the ship; they just seem to power the stuff on the ship.
Right, the ship is
starting
moving.
The engine.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we just didn't put it in gear. Okay,
maybe we stopped the engine when we fired bombs at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we
it returned to the dock to empty the dustpan, and so we got to reset the whole system.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
We got to
hit the
power button back on to let it know that it's done.
Yeah. you've changed the Wi-Fi password since the last time it updated. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we go through here, we go and turn these things back on. I did come across a little secret side area where there were like five treasure chests in a row. Did you guys all find these?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I got my monster horns.
Oh, okay. Nice. It was just funny. Like, I wanted to record that just back to back of just keeps going over and over again.
There's nothing here.
We do, when we get all the way through, we do find the crew. We come through a little back room and we get a little cutscene of them leaving, but we only see one of them leave.
Yes.
At least
that
on my
odd.
Cutscene. You just see one float by and it goes really slow and it just lingers for a bit. And I'm just like, I know there were more in this room.
I looked around.
Where did they
too,
go?
Afterward. I was like, everybody safe? We cool?
This is kind of silly because it's their ship. It's their brig. They don't know what the force field is called. They know there's a secret tunnel, but they don't have like a key taped to the inside just in case.
Yeah.
It's like you have that thing in your trunk in case somebody locks you in there. You can just pop it open.
They stay above deck, usually. I mean, like, they're not Nico. They're not the Nico in this outfit that has to, like, hang out down there and crawl through all the little tunnels that are fun for a Nico to do.
But we go through all this. We get our key, which this time it actually kind of looks like something. I mean, it looks like a Picross puzzle version of a squid, but it still looks like something this time.
Yeah, I guess.
And we can take this back up to the captain's quarters, and we go through all that there. Get the
That's the spot on your map with a giant flame on it, Tegan.
If you can find your way to the captain's quarters.
I do. I feel for you, Tegan, but I also can't. I don't understand. Like, I just don't.
It's literally just me going up and down the two sets of stairs and just never making it to the captain's quarters for 40 minutes and getting more and more distraught that I can't find the captain's quarters.
I can
it's
imagine.
It's
gotta
be the cursed copy. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's gotta be. Because, like, I swear to God, I went everywhere.
I'm just imagining
playing this.
I did everything
right. Why was I cursed?
We're going to rewatch the Twitch VOD, and it's actually just you walking in a circle for 20 minutes,
probably,
sobbing. It's like the Blair Witch, or the guy's just in the corner.
God.
Oh, my God, I'll cry.
I just imagine playing this on one of those old ka-chunk TVs that had, like, the control for contrast and hue and, like, sharpness and stuff. Like, Tegan, just fiddle with the knobs on the side of the TV.
You're right there. You'll watch me.
It's washed out.
I rewatched it, and I watched myself walk by the door that I needed to go through four separate times and being like, there's nothing here.
Yeah, I'm just imagining every time you go out into a room, Fi does her whole thing where she's like, let me go ahead and adjust the map for you. And she just, like, flips it each time. Right. Like, is this more convenient for you this time? How about this? You said you love when she goes and makes that adjustment on the map every time we get a new one.
I do, and I wish you had done it, like, at least once. Please point me in the correct direction. I am begging you, Fi. That's your only job here.
Keep hitting the Fi button to see if there's an option to hold her hand. Just pull me through the dungeon. Where do I go now?
I did talk to Fi a couple times. Just like, do you have anything to help me here?
Nothing.
No, of course not.
She knows a million things except for what you want to know.
Except for which way is out. Please, which way is out?
So we all eventually did figure it out.
Yes.
And we get into the boss room. Now this just threw me off because we get into this boss room. And we get a cutscene where these tentacles just come blasting through the floor.
Oh, man.
And then,
heck yeah.
But then they go away, and then you're just standing there. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do in this room right now? And I literally walked in a circle, and I was like, where am I supposed to go in this room? Because the reality is you're supposed to just turn around and go back
it's
the way
time
you
to
came
leave.
In. But, like, it's not clear. I came
Get
into
out,
this
Samus.
Place to fight a thing. And
No. This is not the battlefield for this particular fight. It is time to leave.
Your Link is braver than any U.S. Marine immediately. You saw the tentacles and went, all right, let's go. And I saw the tentacles and went, I've seen enough hentai to know where this is going, and left.
I was just
I saw
like,
enough
oh.
and decided to stay.
This really comes out of nowhere, though. There's no foreshadowing on this
None.
Boss. Thematically, yeah, a sea monster makes sense, but you kind of... you going in, you would think that the monster at the end was going to be the captain, but that was the mid-boss. So it's like, what are you going to do at the end? And it's like, oh, random squid. How about that?
Yeah, where was Chekhov's Kraken? Like, we needed something, you know. Usually the Kraken is like hinted at beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when
there's
at the
like
end
a
of
shadow under the boat, or like it shudders and all of the crew go, oh, the monster is here.
Yeah, the crew is like terrified of the Kraken, or, you know, we're in Kraken waters, dude. And yeah, nothing. So that when it finally shows up at the end, you're like, you're ready to do this. I still was excited. Like, I ran out of the dungeon like, ooh, this is cool. Like, we've got a thematic thing happening. The boat is breaking around me. Like, I want one of those kinds of scenes. It wasn't that awesome, though. And then the fight ended up kind of being a letdown.
This fight.
I love the fight.
Really?
I thought it was really fun. There were more phases than normal. And like, you had to do a number of different things because
Monsters Inc. character.
Yeah, no, I want a plush of Tantalus. But you know, when we first see the not the first time, while we're escaping the boat, we do have the tentacles blocking our way, and Fi does jump out, and it was just like tutorial time while this boat is like falling into the ocean. And she explains to us that we have to do our Skyward Strike in order to cut this. So that was the one part where I'm like, it just felt slow, where I had to keep charging up my sword to do the slash move with it.
Yes.
Where the whole time I'm running around on the battlefield when we get up to Tantalus, and I'm just like, have my sword up in the air, just running in circles, like, come on, charge. Yeah,
you can't
charge.
Stand in one place. You will get annihilated. So you have to run around with your arm up and then like target something near you. Hope that you don't do a vertical slash when you swing. And then, yeah.
Yeah. So the way this plays out is when we get up there, we actually start to fight. Tantalus shows up, Abyssal Leviathan Tantalus. And the way this works is they will go underwater and shoot their tentacles up through the ground, which we're on just like this really interesting particle board looking thing. So that I think in the design, so that way the tentacles will come up and it looks all splintered, but when it goes back down, it all sort of falls apart.
Yeah. Yeah. It sort of came back together when they went back in on the old, on my version, that it did not like, there was no, it was like, yeah, it was basically like dino damage. It was just like, this looks normal again.
Well, no, that's how it looked too. I'm just saying, like, even the floor itself looked like it was a bunch of like, particle board or whatever, just like pushed together.
Yeah,
it very much quickly became like, I don't know how this ship is floating if it's built like this. I'm surprised it's lasted this long.
It'll go through that. Once you cut enough of its tentacles, it'll show itself again and open its eye. You gotta fire an arrow at its eye. And then it'll come like crashing down.
Like the boat rocking up and down while I'm trying to hit it with an arrow was the most annoying part.
My pulling my arrow, bow and arrow out successfully and not accidentally holding the button down too long and then pulling my net out, because that is a constant. I was hoping I was hoping by this point I would have settled into the controls the way we usually do in one of these Zelda games when we encounter weird old control schemes. Like, all right, camera's backwards. It's fine. Eventually I'll get there. Eventually I assimilate. But I just can't. I cannot get pulling a different item out or pulling a potion out or getting the shield out or whatever. It always, like, goes into a menu and I'm whipping something with the whip, you know, whatever. Like, this is not what I want.
I feel like you can blame the fact that the way that we play these games on the show is that we always end up taking at least a week off in between this stuff.
Yeah.
And where if you were playing this game, if you bought this game and you were playing it, you would be playing it like, you know, at least every other day or something like that, right? You'd be in the mindset of this. And we end up taking breaks, playing games in between, better games that are like, you know, like games that are designed better in general. And so we go back to this and we're like, right, they have to do these weird things because they chose to make us play with a TV remote for this generation.
That's what I mean. Eventually, I settle into it. I reach some sort of equilibrium. I assimilate or whatever you want to say. Like, I get it. I have not with this game. It is an outlier. I don't think I will ever fully grasp these controls. Because it's nice, you can still keep running away from stuff and do everything in your menus if you want to while you're moving around and running away from a bad guy and drinking a potion or whatever. But, like, it is cumbersome and never as easy as they want you to think it should be.
Yeah. But anyway, with Tantalus, you hit the eye, they fall down. All of their, like, tentacles will be in the way at first, so you do have to, like, slash them out a couple out of the way. In order to, like, get through underneath
there. Oh, I just ran right through.
I feel like I was cutting off its dreads, which
yes,
yeah,
didn't
like
feel great.
Haircut.
No. That wouldn't, yeah, no, that wouldn't.
No. They spent years growing those tentacles. So we do that a few times. It does a different phase where the board that we're on is starting to, like, fall apart and we need to get out of here. I didn't mention there's also some Donkey Kong in here. Mm-hmm. As we were getting out of the boat and then also climbing on these things, we have to, like, dodge barrels that are rolling down.
I forgot about
hallways.
That. Yeah.
So that was interesting.
The barrel situation was ridiculous because when you're leaving the ship before the boss fight, you can get hit with the barrels without being able to see them. Like, you're just turning blind mm-hmm. corners into barrels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, when the phase shifts to the second part of the boss fight, there's only one way to get up to the higher level. There's
yes.
one block that you have
one
to climb. Barrels yeah. come down that one block.
They sure do.
You have...
Yeah, I got knocked off for sure.
God help you if you run out of stamina.
The last phase, very similar to the first one, except... that Tantalus does, like, Medusa snake
tentacles. I was like, that's what you've got.
Top of its head.
That's what you've brought
and fires
to phase
you.
Three. Like, this is annoying. This is really bad.
I thought it was
my
fun
face.
Just slashing. I just brought my sword out and was slashing like
crazy. Just trying to pull my bow and arrow out, man. Like, come on. get out of my face.
See, the thing is, I feel like your criticism is still just about the game overall and not about this specific battle.
No, and even with this, like, I'm just like, okay, I swipe those Medusa snake faces away, get my bow and arrow out, get set. Hey, more Medusa buddies, here you come. Ha, ha, ha. I'm like, no, just fine. Cool, you can do that. I have dealt with them. I put them aside. It is time for the part of the phase where I bring out more Medusa buddies. Ha, ha, ha. I'm like, no.
But we eventually beat them, and we get access to the next flame. We hit the little shrine with our Skyward Slash, and Fi gets the energy, shoots straight up in the air, and comes crashing down, where we get a great Link reaction here.
I pull out the sword.
Then she gives us a new upgrade to let us... Douse even more.
Love dowsing.
I was livid. I was like, I was having a great time with this, and you reward the thing you hate.
You all saw my reaction because I posted it immediately. But I was just like, woo, we can douse with the power of the gods. Four new dousing spots. Have we had all four filled up at any point? And it was like, you better be bringing some really cool stuff to the table, Fi, because so far I haven't even used the four you've given me.
What this does, we're going to be wrapping up here, but just with the, because I don't want to be talking, I want to talk as little about dowsing as possible. But what this does is it gives us slots for a permanent dowsing ability that we will get the eventual ability to be able to douse the goddess cubes. We will get the ability for materials. And, like, we'll get... you just have to talk to the right person, and then Fi's like, oh, okay, you probably want to douse for that. I'm going to give a permanent thing on here mm-hmm. now for you to do that.
Right.
That's actually cool for, like, completionist stuff, right?
Once,
like,
I got the goddess cube,
area,
I was like, all right, it's worth it, I guess.
Because that will let us get a bunch more money, possibly get some more heart pieces. Like, there's uses for that. It's made the dowsing like this is, if this is what dowsing was, period, like we just unlocked this ability here, okay, I'd be fine with it. If Fi was not constantly saying, hey, you should douse, you should douse, you should douse, it would just be so, it would, just so annoying. It's so annoying. It's like this part I should be fine with because it's actually useful. And I'm like, yes.
But they don't give it to you immediately.
No.
They just say, aren't you excited? And I'm like, no. Not quite yet.
We're going to wrap up here. For our next episode, we're going to get to the entrance of the next dungeon. It isn't 100% clear that you're at the entrance of the next dungeon. But once you fill up this froggy face on the wall full of water and make them all happy, you know you've made it to the end of the episode. So do that. Go fly around. Go help some people.
Keep
make sure
keep
it's the
faith.
Big froggy face.
Yeah, the big
there's,
froggy face. The biggest
not
froggy
his,
face.
Not his two little froggy friends before.
No.
But the
we
big
want Frog
third
Fractions
one.
3.
Yes. You want the third one. Do that. Yes.
Keep
find
the
some
faith.
Other things.
We are in the darkest part of the game right now, apparently. So keep the faith. And hopefully we'll see you next time on Chat of the Wild.
That's my line!